That is Dave Coulter, who is with Osage, Inc. If you want more information on that, you can go to osagegroup.com. When you ran into me at the Good Food Festival.
Right.
And that's where this came about, the idea that you'd be on the show. The minute you brought it up, I thought, this is really interesting stuff.
It is.
And it's something you've been researching, what 20 years or so?
Oh, no, I wouldn't go quite that far. But this is one of these topics that, I'm a small businessman. I'm also an adjunct instructor over at Triton College, so I wear a number of different hats. So this interest in American hedgerows really started about, close to 10 years ago. And it really came about after I was at a conference in England for ecological restoration. And you go to England, and hedgerows over there are maintained much like the Nature Conservancy maintains prairies and wetlands over here in the United States. And it was really a remark. It was eye opening for me, because now, these features, Mike, are something that humans planted. Human beings planted these things. They're basically utilitarian kinds of structures in agriculture. They were basically like fences, farm boundaries. Mm-hmm. And over the centuries and the millennia, in many places in the world, they have now become harbors of biodiversity in areas that are otherwise pretty degraded. So what happened in my case, when I was in England, I recalled the hedgerows that we see. If you travel south of the city throughout the Midwest, you go through the corn and soybean deserts, in our state and adjacent states. And, there's not much biodiversity left in these places. So I guess I saw these features and kind of applied them to our life here in the Midwest. And that's what got me thinking. And if you think of my business name, Osage orange trees were hedgerow materials that were planted here in the 19th century.
Right, right. Did you call yourself that before you started studying?
Yeah. Actually, I did, because I grew up next to a row of these things out in the south suburbs. So, and when I was a little kid, we weren't really that into trees. We would take the monkey balls, we called them, and we'd throw them at each other.
Monkey brains. I always call them monkey brains.
That might be a North Side thing. But so that's where it started. I mean, I actually grew up next to one of them. When I picked a name for my business, I wanted to do something that was kind of related to forestry and something that were related to my own past. So I guess the monkey brain doesn't fall too far from the tree.
And just wait. Before we do that, I want to get to this, but Fran called regarding the mason bee nest.
Yes.
Fran, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Number one, city council and most politicians, they're not tools. They are whores for power.
Okay. See, I was being nice, huh? Okay. I was cutting them some slack.
Nice. Number two, on the mason bee hives, another readily available source of material is Phragmites australis. It's a grass that's Eurasian and terribly invasive, and
right. It'd
be killing two birds with one stone if we got rid of it. You can take the dried stems of those babies, as long as you include a node at one end, so it's closed off at one end, and you can cut them off. Bee people know how to do this, nature types and whatnot. They know how to do this. But Phragmites australis is another readily available source. Put a little primitive roof over the top of it, and you're cooking. I had them move into these stems within a few days. I was just amazed. It was the first time I'd ever experimented with that sort of thing. So on to point number three. For about over 20 years now, I've been, as I told you a couple years ago, I've been growing my own prairies and wetlands and woodlands on 10 acres that I bought south of here. And the hedgerow that I've built, this fellow, what is his name again? I'm sorry.
Dave Coulter.
Coulter.
C-O-U-L-T-E-R, Dave.
Yeah. Interesting name. Anyway, he would really like seeing my hedgerow. I've got everything in it from a couple remnant Osage oranges to viburnums and crab apples and wild plums and you name it. It is I'm in a desert of soybean and corn, and it is like a magnet for wildlife. It's just alive.
So you're saying that
excellent.
You can use it sounds like you can use just about anything to create one of those mason bee habitats. You were using Phragmites, huh?
Phragmites, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just finally we found a use for Phragmites other than have it taking over the world. Yes. Great. Well, Fran, thank you so much. I appreciate the insight.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. You have a great day. By the way, if you want to comment, 773-763-9278. We're with Dave Coulter, as I mentioned, from Osage, Inc., and we're talking about hedgerows. Maybe we should, for urban people, they might not understand what a hedgerow is.
Well, that's true, especially, a lot of us of a certain age, we'll hear the word hedgerow and we think of Led Zeppelin lyrics. it's a word that's not really familiar to a lot of Americans, and... for good reason. Our history isn't quite the same as it is in Europe and places like that. So, in urban areas, I think the thing that's exciting is when I think about this, we all know farm country and we can make that leap, making field boundaries. And your caller had an excellent point. I mean, he's using plant materials, crab apples, viburnums, native plant materials. That's kind of the key thing here. We want to think about if we're going to reinvent these things. In urban areas, I don't see why these can't be used. We've got think of all the different linear areas we have in this town, expressways, rivers, by community gardens, you name it. There's all kinds of opportunities for replanting.
Traditionally, a hedgerow was planted to keep livestock in place.
Correct.
So that's why you had things like Osage Orange in the United States.
Exactly.
Once settlers here discovered Osage Orange, it was like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Sure.
Although sliced bread didn't come till the 21st or 20th century. They took it native to areas around Oklahoma, Texas Panhandle. Around there, but then folks got a hold of it and they took it all over the country, and we have them in Illinois.
Right.
And as we mentioned, the fruit looks like monkey brains or monkey balls or whatever you want to call them.
Well, one of the things that
And the wood is very, very hard.
Exactly. It's a really interesting plant, and one of the things that I've been over the years I've been reading about this is really the key to, I think, maintaining these things and upgrading them. I think there's terrific potential for biodiversity if we're going to include native plants in repurposing these things. Again, these features were not originally installed with the idea of biodiversity, 400 or 500 years ago.
Nor were they installed with the idea of using native plants.
Right, exactly.
And that's part of the argument against them. Some folks will say, well, this is not native plant material. Osage might be native, but it's not necessarily native to the East Coast or the West Coast.
Exactly. And that's one of the problem. That's one of the problems I think people, a potential land manager might think about, too, is keeping them free of invasive species. That's one of the topics and your next guest will be talking about that, too. Invasive species is... that's not just a problem in hedgerows. That's a problem in our woods, our fields, our cities, everywhere, invasive species. And really, these features are no different.
Yet these hedgerows, even with non-native plants in them, turned out to be a haven for biology.
Exactly.
Insects, birds, mammals.
Yeah, one of the things I think you and I were talking about down at the Good Food Conference was, there's a study I read from England where they studied one hedgerow over in southwest England, and they trapped something like 1,500 different insect species out of this one hedgerow. Now, that's pretty amazing stuff, and you listen to people smarter than I am, like E.O. Wilson, and he's always talking about biodiversity and looking after the smallest of creatures in our society. So, I think there's great potential for insects, birds, small mammals. But again, it's not just the kind of thing you can just plunk any old plant in the ground. I mean, I think there's some thought needs to go into with native plants and things like that.
So you're saying perhaps we have an opportunity to create a new kind of hedgerow?
Exactly. I would call
hedgerows for the 21st
century.
I
call it the postmodern hedgerow myself.
Postmodern hedgerow.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with that. We're at a place, especially in America, as you say, in England, they revere these and they're protecting them. And
to a point, yeah. I mean, it's a battle everywhere. I mean,
people, okay.
It's not like they're.
But we're worse here, right?
Well, our history's different.
But they are being torn down because people look at them. First of all, I would imagine that you almost need a historian to determine whether a grove is an old hedgerow or not.
Exactly.
I mean, how do you know where it came from unless you've got the history of it?
Right, land use records, that sort of things. One of my friends up at Lake County Forest Preserves is doing research on that very thing from hedgerows that were planted, I think, in the 1930s. So he's looking at it from a cultural standpoint. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's one of the things that interests me, and I would suspect interests you and your audience too, is, there's so many things that intersect here. You know, it's not just history and ecology and agriculture, it's biodiversity, it's environment, it's pollinators. The thing, Mike, is when I started, thinking about this a few years ago, nobody was talking about pollinators. 5-10 years ago. Now this has become a really critical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's research that's out there where they've studied these repurposed hedgerows and how they are really successful for pollinators, never mind any other species of wildlife. So I think there's an opportunity there for society to examine these things.
Well, what would you put in your post?
If I was king?
Yeah, what kind of hedgerow would you have?
Well, I would go.
I mean, would you go with Osage?
When
would
I was, yeah, because I'm sentimental. But if I was unlimited by time, space, and money, I would do a mixture of native woody plants. When we were down at the Good Food Conference, Possibility Place, as I had to give a talk there about permaculture and woody food plants. There's a lot of interest with hedgerows with woody food plants. So maybe things like serviceberry, maybe things like viburnums, maybe things like aronia. You could put herbaceous plants in.
And the thing is, we don't have to. You're not going to use it as a barrier for cattle anymore.
Exactly.
And livestock.
Right, right. Those days are gone. So I think one of the interesting things is, is there a possibility in these margins, not just in farm country, but in the city too, for food? Blackberries, you name it. I mean, there's a great...
Here's the problem. As you've pointed out in the material you sent me, and you can read it at my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show and see some of the stuff. In fact, Dave wrote a paper on this. You're still trying to get your master's?
Yeah. That's another one of the... I'm a graduate student, Miami University and Brookfield Zoo, their AIP program, and that's given me a... Actually, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, to be at this point in my life and, how it is. You still like to learn.
Yeah. I learn something every week here.
We're always learning. So,
And what's changed is that we use fencing.
Exactly.
And the other thing that's changed are the subsidies for the row crops. And I've talked about that on this show before, and I've had people talk. I've had farmers call me. And in fact, if there are any farmers listening that have hedgerows and can talk about their experience, would love to hear about it, 773-763-9278. But the point is, when I talk to people, I find out that everybody's trying to squeeze the last dime out of their land. And these hedgerows go so that you can put in a few more or a bushel of corn.
But let me give you one counterbalance to that, the Leopold Center out at Iowa State University, they're doing research on these. They call them prairie strips. Now, these are not woody plants. These are herbaceous plants, native plants that we all, are becoming familiar with. And what they're doing is they're interplanting these rows. They're finding... Because they got to bring the pollinators back in. It's like Mike, we've come, it's like society goes full circle with these things. We'll drain a wetland, then we'll have to rebuild it because we realize that we need them. And I'm starting to wonder if, again, these utilitarian features that became something good kind of by accident, again, if we're not missing an opportunity to make some improvements in a world where really biodiversity's on the run. So, again, these things cost money and time and labor and everything else. And I, you know, the farm people I've spoken to, which I've gotten both sides of this. You know, I know some farm people say, like, they don't want to deal with these things and they want to maximize the value of their land. But then on the other hand, there are farmers that are like, well, yeah, but these pollinators and these creatures need a place to live, too. So what's the balance?
Well, I think the balance is you got to have some of this.
I agree.
I mean, that's the nature of balance. If you take it all away for the row crops, there's no balance. We've lost the balance. And that's the part of the problem is that we have lost too much of this. And as you've pointed out, again, in the materials you sent me, most of the time when you lose a natural area, you don't get it back.
Not in this world. we're our population's growing by the day, and it's a fight to it's a fight to hold on to anything that we like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
So the idea is don't lose them. Yeah, you were investigating a couple of hedgerows near Chicago, and you said one in 2008 was torn down for a. It's not just farmland. It's for a shopping center.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, all right, so now we got asphalt instead.
Exactly.
So it's not just that we're putting in row crops. We're also putting in shopping centers. And
that's a fact.
Not a lot of diversity there.
No. So I hope this topic, I know it's interesting to me, but I'll admit I'm an eccentric. But, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, folks out in your audience can see some value in ideas like this, and I think it's got some application somewhere. I mean, that's what horticulture is. You know, it's people and plants and nature. You know, and you know, let's try and do something.
Well,
here.
It just makes so much sense. That's why I responded to it, because here the idea that we have a haven, even a tiny haven, because a hedgerow is not very wide. How many meters wide?
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
If you go in England, I saw them actually narrower than your desk here.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones I recall out that I think we talked about out there near Bolingbrook that are gone now, those were probably about 40 feet across.
Mm-hmm. Which is not very big.
No.
But the idea that it tells you something about nature, that you got a thing that's 40 feet across and then it's harboring like 1,500 species of insect because they're desperate to find some place, some haven.
Mm-hmm. And birds.
And birds.
And birds.
And mammals.
The birds that eat the insects. You know
right.
I mean? Right now we're in migratory bird season. You know, last night we were sitting out back watching the warblers picking the bugs off the trees. Well, you know, those birds need a place to eat, too. So it's all, you know, it's all linked together.
That is Dave Coulter, and he is with Osage, Inc. The Osage, if you want to go to the website, it's osagegroup.com. You know, I got a break here, but one of the things that we mentioned was the iconic nature of Osage oranges. And let's not forget that several years ago I was helping Guy Sternberg try to preserve the Osage orange in Kewaunee, which they did. And then they had the Tour de Trees.
Guy's a terrific guy.
He is just amazing. Yeah, I got to have him back on the show. You know, he also has the lowest voice of he's the radio guy. But that tree got saved, and it's right on the main drag in Kewaunee. And what had happened over the years is let's pave, we'll hope, you know. And then suddenly Guy goes, you know, this was a historic tree. This is part of probably was a hedgerow. Tree. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's left is this tree that it's got the sidewalk encroaching on it and the street encroaching on it and the curb and everything and lawn and, you know, all the chemicals that go with lawn and all that. And here's this tree and all it's doing is surviving. And then I watched, after everybody went and the tour de trees, we stopped there, photo op, guys climbed the, they rappelled up the tree and came down and then rode off. And then Guy Mellier, arborist extraordinaire, also was there. I came back later, and there he was all by himself pruning the tree. You know, it's like, let's get the work done.
Sure.
And the idea was they were pruning it to make it safer because city council was going to just take it down.
Mm-hmm.
And they made this, they decided on a Friday or something like that, we're going to take this down. And Guy got wind of it, and he's trying to get a hold of people over the weekend and go, wait, well, you can't, you, what?
Yeah,
you can't do this.
Well, those trees are part of our legacy. I mean, you know, it's one thing for me to talk about, you know, hedgerows in England and places like that where they can be hundreds or maybe even thousands of years old. But, you know, this is our legacy, too. You know, and our legacy isn't quite that ancient, but it's important to us. And I think, you know, this is something for everybody to be aware of and to value.
And there's an Osage orange in my neighborhood in Logan Square on the Parkway. And I love it because every year in the fall, it drops those Osage oranges and they're all over the street and all over.
Do you think it's part of an old hedgerow or just came in?
I doubt it. I got a feeling somebody threw that in there.
A squirrel brought it in.
As a practical joke, maybe. I don't know. But because it's right, that's the other thing. It's right next to the road.
Sure.
That's where they end up, I guess. But there it is. And it reminds me that this is a tree with a great tradition.
Yeah.
And something I learned researching this, it's the only, what was it? The only genus, is it? Tree genus that has one species. It's maybe not the only one. But
that might be ginkgo. It's in the mulberry family.
Yeah, it's in the mulberry family. Yeah. But I was reading about this.
But no, I think you're I think you're right about the genus part of it. I think you're right.
It may not be the only one, but it is a genus.
It's Maclura pomifera, and I'm not sure that there's another Maclura out there. So you might be right on that.
I think that's what I read.
Yeah.
But, all right. Speaking of buddies. Dave Coulter, one of yours and mine, Chris Mast from Tree Guardian, tweeted. He says, Dave C. is a kindred spirit. He has an interest in something most people don't care about, but he feels is important. And I'm with you.
Thanks, Chris.
it is, you know, hedgerow is kind of not on anybody's radar.
Exactly.
But it makes so much sense. You know,
I like the way you think. You know, it's one of those things that I think there is a lot of common sense applications, whether it's rural or urban areas.
All right. Here's the argument against it, I guess. People would say messy.
Yep.
Too hard to upkeep.
Yep.
How do we, you know, and then the exotic invasives will get in there. You know, Kathy McGlynn's going to be on in just a few minutes.
Exactly. And all those points are valid points. You know, as a horticulturist, as an arborist. You know, the people I work with, you know, they deal, everybody's got budgets. Everybody's got to deal with management issues, no matter what they are. So,
And that's the thing. I mean, we want it all. We want to be able to clean it up without any muss, any fuss, and it better be neat and tidy or we're not interested. Well, folks, this is why we plant species that are males so we don't have fruit because fruit's messy. And then my buddy Tom Ogren, who's written about allergy-free gardening, says we create these pollen corridors because we're neatness freaks.
Right.
And then we're paying the price because at night it blows in your window and you wonder why you can't sleep because you got allergies and you're breathing in, sucking in this stuff all night, like sucking in pet coke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's except these are we've planted these and put these out. Where do we put them? We put these corridors outside of hospitals. We put them outside of schools and we wonder why people are having a hard time getting better.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, it's like in a lot of ways, it's like a lot of this stuff is common sense. It's like any other type of gardening. If you put in a vegetable garden, you have to weed it. You have to take care of it. There's going to be invasives that come into a vegetable garden.
So what?
A prairie.
Sure,
you
they
name
are.
It.
Yeah. So
sure.
This is always part of the issue.
Yep.
So how do you get your point across? What are you doing? I mean, you know, I'm thinking slogans now. Hedgerows for the future. Hedgerows. I have no idea.
Well, one of the problems is, you know, again, the word hedgerow is it can be a bit of a stumbling block here in the United States. You know, so I mean, it may need a PR campaign.
Well, yeah, we can rename it. Hey, listen, I've already started my PR campaign to rename milkweed. I'm calling it monarch plant. Do not use the word milkweed because the word weed is in it.
Yep.
You call it monarch plant, and more people will grow it.
That's a good idea.
So what do we call hedgerows? We need to – you're not going to come up with it right now, but we need to come up with something
I just wrote a little bit more about these plants, and a friend of mine up in Minnesota, Mike Reichenbach, gave me a word, refugia, which is
– I like that. I saw that word. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Isn't that an awesome word? I wish I could take credit for it because others have used it too.
Refugia.
Refugia.
As in refuge.
Exactly.
And so –
but that's another word we might have to do some explaining to, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that that's going
to
–
you know, it's easier to understand when you see it on paper than it is when you hear it.
Yeah.
You see refugia, you go, oh, yeah, refuge. Yeah,
sure.
I get it.
Sure.
But maybe that's the word. Refuge corridors.
You know, but that's what it's about. I mean, you know, we're trying to give these creatures a place to live, you know?
Yeah.
In a world where we're losing space, you know, probably in the last, you know, hour of the show, you know, we've lost how much space out there, do you think, you know?
Well, it's
you know, we laugh about
stunning.
That. We laugh about the stuff, but it's
I don't laugh about
no,
it.
I know. I cry
about it.
No, I know. I don't mean that in a humorous way, but it's just one of these things that's – you know, we have choices we can make, and I think we've got the tools that are out there. I mean, if you look around, there's lots of good resources. We just have to have the courage to use them.
I think that's a good way to end it. You can find out, more information by going to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, read about Dave Coulter, and give me a quick plug for you. What does your business do? I mean,
basically you're looking at the business. It's just me. I work with municipalities, engineers, landscape architects. I do urban forestry consulting work, horticultural consulting work, project management, things like that. And at Triton College, I'm an adjunct teacher in their sustainable horticulture program, which we've just ramp that up in a big way. We're doing a lot of stuff with urban agroecology, sustainable horticulture, and urban farming. So we're fighting the fight.
Good for you. Triton College. And if you're interested in the biz, and that would be a good place to study for anybody thinking about it. And, you know, contact Dave. And I've got the information. You can go to osagegroup.com. And, Dave, thanks so much for coming by.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure. It really has been.
Well, we'll do it again. We have to follow through. All right?
Yeah,
We will do this.
It's got to be more than talk.
Refugia.
Refugia.
You like refugia. Okay.
Yeah,
refugia.
Well, it's another word.